Welcome to Ekatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
So today we're diving deep into a novel that's just, well, massive. Psychologically incredibly complex, Leo Tolstoy's Anna Karenina.
It really is often called, the pinnacle of realist fiction.
Exactly. A truly monumental study of love, family, society, and that agonizing search for meaning in 19th century Russia.
And you really can't start talking about Anna Karenina without that first line. It's so famous.
Absolutely. All happy families are alike. Each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way.
It's just this perfect, almost epigrammatic statement. It sets the tone for everything, doesn't it?
It really does. And that declaration, that's kind of our map for this deep dive, right? Our mission, if you like, is to unpack how Tolstoy uses these two really contrasting stories running in parallel.
Anna's story, the passion, the tragedy, and then Levin's quest.
Yeah. Levin's seeking duty, fulfillment, faith, and how Tolstoy uses them to explore that opening thesis, all against the backdrop of this, well, intensely judgmental society.
It helps to understand Tolstoy himself, just briefly. He was a Russian count, born into aristocracy.
Right.
But deeply conflicted about it. He became this profound moral philosopher. And you feel that moral seriousness all through the book.
Mm-hmm.
Anna Karenina, published serially, what was it, 1875 to 77, it definitely marks a shift for him, having the huge historical canvas of war and peace.
Yeah, Napoleon and all that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This novel zooms right in on the intimate, the complex world of domestic life, showing us that, the battles inside the heart can be just as epic.
Okay, so let's unpack that central tragedy first. Let's talk about Anna Arkadyevna Karenina herself. The sources paint her as, well, extraordinary, don't they? Beauty, intelligence, grace.
Absolutely. But she's trapped from the start, trapped in this this gilded cage of convention, this cold formal marriage to Alexei Karenin.
And Karenin himself is so important to understand. A high-ranking official lives by rules, procedure, duty.
Very much so. Yeah. Almost treats his wife, maybe even himself, like a document to be filed. There's a real lack of emotional warmth there.
That sort of sterile environment is the powder keg, isn't it?
Completely. And her journey really kicks off when she goes to Moscow. She's there to intervene in her brother Steva Oblonsky's marriage.
Ah, Steva. Charming. Always messing up. Never really sorry.
That's him. He's had an affair, devastated his wife, Dolly. And Anna, ironically, manages to reconcile them. It shows her emotional depth, her understanding.
But while she's there.
Yes. The grand ball. And she meets Count Alexei Vronsky, dashing, wealthy cavalry officer.
And the connection is just, boom, instantaneous.
Like a force of nature. He'd never felt anything like it. And it's immediately destructive, isn't it?
Yeah, because he was courting Kitty Shcherbatskaya, quite seriously, it seemed.
He was. And he just drops her, shifts his attention entirely to Anna, publicly, cruelly. That's the moment, really. Rejecting the predictable path, Kitty, for this passionate impossibility, Anna.
And Tolstoy doesn't shy away from foreshadowing the doom, does he? That train incident.
Oh, absolutely. As Anna leaves Moscow, that poor railway worker killed by the train. It's so ominous.
Anna herself sees it as a bad omen, right? A shadow over this new feeling.
She does. And of course, the railway, trains, they become this recurring, powerful symbol throughout modernity, maybe. Inescapable fate, the force that ultimately crushes her.
Their relationship just accelerates from there, doesn't it, towards disaster. And the public turning point, the horse race.
Yes, in St. Petersburg, Vronsky's riding his horse, Frou-Frou. The horse stumbles, breaks its back.
Terrible scene.
And Anna's reaction, she just can't hide it. This visceral, panicked cry, it exposes everything. The depth of her feelings right there in front of everyone, including Karenin.
The facade just shatters.
Completely. The private affair becomes a public scandal. And her affair, it's driven by this desperate, all-or-nothing intensity. But choosing that love forces her to defy this incredibly rigid society.
A society that, as the sources say, offers women no freedom.
Exactly. She's forced onto this irreversible path, an outcast.
Okay, so if that kind of unbridled passion leads to ruin, what's the alternative? What does Tolstoy suggest is, well, sustainable? And that brings us beautifully to the counter-narrative, the philosophical heart of the novel, really. Konstantin Levin. Levin, the landowner. Awkward, maybe thoughtful, often seen as Tolstoy's stand-in.
Very much so. He's not looking for meaning in high society's glitter. He's seeking authenticity, faith, practical life, rooted in the land, his country estate.
His proposal to Kitty gets rejected initially, right? She's still hung up on Vronsky.
She is. But Levin's journey is about hard-won wisdom. It's grounded in something real, unlike Anna's sort of volatile pursuit.
But before Levin finds his footing, Anna hits her absolute point of no return. The pregnancy.
Yes, pregnant with Vronsky's child. And during childbirth, she's near death.
This leads to that incredibly complex moment with Karenin.
It's fascinating. He thinks she's dying, and he has this moment of, well, almost impossible Christian charity. He forgives her. He forgives Vronsky, offers to raise the child.
It's such a break from his usual character, and devastating for Anna, strangely enough.
Yes. The sources say she's horrified by his goodness. It's baffling at first, but she was ready for his anger, maybe. That would have justified her actions in her own mind.
But his forgiveness, it makes her feel guilty, trapped.
Exactly. She recovers, feels completely paralyzed by this, and then chooses elopement. Leaves everything home, reputation, and crucially, her son, Seryozha, which is just agony for her.
And then you see the contrast of Ella between the two men pursuing passion. Vronsky gives up his military career, his social standing.
He does, but he quickly finds out, as the source says, passion alone is not enough to build a life. They travel. Their love seems perfect in isolation, but it lacks an anchor.
He becomes aimless, trapped in a different way.
Yeah, filling his time with pointless hobbies, realizing their isolation has just created this vacuum.
Meanwhile, Levin, his path is resilience, patience.
It's maturation. He finds purpose not in that grand sweeping passion, but in the, you know, the challenging day-to-day realities of marriage.
To Kitty. And Kitty herself changes so much.
Dramatically.
Yeah.
From that naive debutante, crushed by Vronsky, she becomes this capable, grounded wife and mother, finding stability in domestic life.
There's that amazing symbolic scene too, isn't there? Levin mowing hay.
Oh, yes. Mowing alongside his peasants. The physical work, the shared purpose. It strips away his aristocratic angst, his intellectual overthinking.
He finds joy in it.
Pure, unthinking joy. It symbolizes the value Tolstoy places on honest labor, connection to the land. The simple, fulfilling life. The complete opposite of the hollow society that destroys Anna.
Which brings us right back to that social critique. And this is where things get really fascinating when you look at 19th century morality. Nice. The sheer hypocrisy.
It's brutal. Think about Anna's brother, Stiva.
Right. His affairs are just shrugged off. Minor indiscretions. Part of being a man back then.
Casually tolerated. But Anna's single, passionate affair. Total social annihilation. She's judged not just for the affair, but for refusing to live the lie afterward.
And that public shaming. The opera scene.
So vivid. So brutal. Just shows how completely society has rejected her. For women, then, defying the marriage contract meant losing everything. Your identity, your place.
And Karenin's trajectory. It's tragic in its own right, isn't it?
Absolutely. A man trapped by the very conventions he upholds. That brief moment of humanity, of forgiveness, it doesn't last.
He hardens again.
Under the influence of Countess Lydia Ivanovna, manipulative, pseudo-pious, he refuses Anna the divorce.
Which basically seals her fate. She can never remarry, never legitimize her life with Vronsky. Doomed to this social limbo.
And this isolation just intensifies her psychological decline. Confined to Vronsky's estate, cut off from society, separated from her son Seryozha, that separation is a constant source of unbearable pain.
Her whole world just shrinks down to Vronsky's love. That becomes everything.
Her only tether. And that huge weight of expectation makes her possessive, jealous, paranoid, eventually.
And the morphine use starts
to cope with the anxiety, the sleeplessness. It just isolates her further, pushes her away from Vronsky, from rational thought. Their love, which started as this incredible liberation, it just curdles, becomes this suffocating, destructive dependency.
The end is just chilling. That final vicious argument.
Fueled by her jealousy, her paranoia, she sees no way out. Tormented, likely under the influence of morphine, she goes to the railway station.
And she remembers the worker killed right at the start.
Explicitly. The sources emphasize that. That initial dark omen comes back to claim her.
In a final desperate act,
yeah,
maybe to punish Vronsky, maybe just to end her own suffering.
She throws herself under the train, ending her life with that same instrument of modernity, of fate. It feels utterly inevitable, prepared for from page one.
But the novel doesn't stop right there, does it? It circles back to Levin. The search for meaning continues.
Right. Vronsky is devastated, obviously. Consumed by guilt, he seeks death, volunteering for the Serbian-Turkish War, which seemed pretty pointless.
But Levin, he gets his revelation.
He does. After months, maybe years, of spiritual struggle, wrestling with the big questions, life, death, purpose, he hears this simple peasant talking about faith.
What does the peasant say?
Something like, One should live not for one's own needs, but for God, which Levin interprets as living for goodness, for compassion.
And that clicks for him.
It seems to. It's not some grand theological breakthrough, but the simple idea triggers acceptance.
Yeah.
He finds this fragile but profound peace. Meaning isn't in some abstract ideal, but in daily duty, faith, love within his family.
The sustainable counterbalance to Anna's absolute destructive passion.
Exactly. And to really get the weight of it all, you have to remember the epigraph Tolstoy chose.
Vengeance is mine, I will repay, from Romans.
Yeah. It frames the whole story within this larger cosmic moral order.
It complicates how we judge everyone, doesn't it? It warns against human society playing God, maybe. Like the society that condemned Anna.
Perhaps. Or maybe it also suggests Anna shouldn't have taken vengeance into her own hands with suicide. It suspends easy judgment. It makes you think.
Ultimately, it feels like this enduring portrait of conflict. Passionate love, destructive outside the bounds of duty.
Versus familial love, which is shown as life-affirming, sustainable, within commitment and responsibility. It seems to argue that happiness comes when our personal quest aligns with that need for connection, for goodness.
And maybe what makes Anna Karenina so timeless is that it refuses easy answers.
Yeah.
It just gives us this unforgettable, deeply compassionate look at humans struggling to love, messing up, and trying to find meaning in a flawed, complex world.
Yeah, it doesn't preach. It just shows us life and all its messy glory and tragedy.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.